if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups and your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a medical droid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. I am Michael, your host and lifeguard. Make sure people don't drown in the back to waters, because Luke in Empire looked like he was drowning.
No, that's true.
I think they were trying.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Lucas was trying to kill Luke long before Rian Johnson actually did.
I really do think, yeah. I mean, Lucas wanted to torture Mark Hamill, unfortunately.
Do you know why that scene was added? Do you guys remember that Star Wars history?
Oh, where?
Because of his accident.
Yeah.
Because of the accident. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently, he looked so different after his horrific car accident that they had to add a scene to justify how different he would look. And he does. When you look at New Hope,
Compared to
Empire Strikes Back, he looks like a different person.
Night and day. Night and day.
He actually had a little more of a pretty face in New Hope and kind of got just average looking in Empire.
Because it was because of the plastic surgery.
Well, and that was a major reason why he went into voice acting, because it was a big self-esteem blow.
Yeah, it was a traumatic event for him. That's why he cites that basically that's why he went into voice acting.
Do you think anybody ever has an accident and comes out looking better? Because that'd be great for me.
That'd be fantastic.
Like, can I drive drunk one night and slam into a wall and look better? Listen, that's a legitimate question. And is an experiment worthy of trying out? All right. Welcome, everyone, to Back to Tank. We are here today to talk about the latest and greatest Star Wars news. And in the studio to keep me from slamming into a wall or jumping off a ledge is David. Hello.
How's it going, everybody?
And also Thomas. Hello.
Hello.
All right, so let's start with some good news. First off, Star Wars The Phantom Menace celebrates 25 years with a return to theaters.
Yeah, I hate to say it because remember...
Why do you hate to say it, though?
I hate to say it because we started this show with me actually saying how much I hated Phantom Menace.
Really?
And throughout the years, yeah. Throughout the years, it grew on me.
Oh, you mean way back when
we first started, and I had to eat my words.
I still have my problems with Phantom Menace, but overall, the movie's just fine. And when you compare this movie to everything Disney has done... Yeah, this is the better movie.
Yeah, Phantom Menace is better because it's just fun. There's moments, at least in Phantom Menace, when I look back at it now, I'm going, okay, I really enjoyed that. Duel of Fates, probably one of the best lightsaber scenes of all time.
Without a doubt. There's too many good things in this movie to shit on the whole film. Like, there's just too much. It's a cohesive story. It's a well-rounded story. It's a coherent story. There are just a few aspects that make you scratch your head, and that has to do with the marketability of the film and trying to market it to a younger demo. That was his intent. But if you take that away, or at least recognize what the film was attempting to be, then it's just fine. Those issues go away. You can't say that about a movie like The Last Jedi. That movie is just bad because it's written poorly. It's a beautiful picture. It's a beautiful, beautiful work, but
visually,
even directing is fine, but the writing is just straight garbage. So on to happy news. As I was saying, the Phantom Menace will return to theaters for its 25th anniversary. I feel very old, starting May 3rd to coincide with the re-release. Artist Matt Ferguson has created a beautiful new poster.
That's probably going to cost you an arm and a leg to get.
Now. It actually is a really nice looking poster.
It is.
I miss. I missed Star Wars from Lucas. See, this is a sad thing. This is supposed to be like a happy thing. Hey, we're giving something back to you guys. It's the 25th anniversary. All this does is make me more depressed about Star Wars. Yep.
It kind of does, because like...
It's like watching old home movies after your brother already became a drug addict and killed himself.
Oh, I was going to say it's like watching home movies when you were actually good-looking, young,
vibrant.
When you were happy.
Not full obese. Of life.
Full of life.
Full of life, hope, promise.
Yeah.
And now looking at you now in the mirror and you bald, just look like...
sad. heavy, you know, bags under the eyes. Heavily
medicated.
Hopeless. Wrinkled.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
destitute.
So anyone interested like in seeing, no, so stupid. No, I'm not. You think I was trying to sell myself to women? David, are you interested in seeing this in the theater again?
Oh, absolutely. I want to actually see it in the big screen one more time because now with like how everything has turned out, the thing I've...
That's the most political way to say that.
Well, no. Okay, let me correct that. Not talking about the Disney stuff.
Yeah.
But it's something that I actually mentioned to my wife when I said, oh, hey, the 25th anniversary is coming out. I'd like to go see it. And she's all gung-ho to actually see it because she's a big Star Wars fan. And we both came to the realization, if it wasn't for this moment of Phantom Menace starting, we wouldn't have Clone Wars. We wouldn't have... Bad Batch. We wouldn't have even Rebels.
Yep.
We wouldn't have any of those really great shows that came out if this moment didn't happen where we got the prequels.
I have said this countless times on this show, and I know there are Star Wars fans out there that probably want to kill me every time I say this, but I'll say it again. For me, my favorite Star Wars movies are the prequels. Not even the original films anymore. Like, I love them. I love the original films. And my favorite Star Wars movie is probably Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But if I had to pinpoint a specific era and style that would tell someone what type of Star Wars I like or prefer, it's the prequel era. Not just because of the style, but also just look at the overall story. The story, the narrative itself is way more complex, way more in depth than the very simple plot structure of the original trilogy.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, like the story of Anakin compared to the story of Luke.
Well, one's a hero's journey. One's tragedy. The hero's journey.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a tragedy. But like when you look at like the, I want to say like the creative input or the creativity in both stories, Anakin's story is just, you know, night and day better than Luke's story, unfortunately, because I love Luke.
Yep.
I love I love the story of the hero's journey, but Anakin's story is so complex and so layered that it leaves you rooting for the villain in the very end.
And also retrospectively, Anakin's story has become, as you had said a few moments ago, it's pretty much the platform for all of the best Star Wars things we've been given since. Without Anakin's story, Clone Wars really wouldn't matter.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
Without Anakin, you also wouldn't have Ahsoka.
You wouldn't have Obi-Wan. And Obi-Wan is one of my favorite.
You could have Obi-Wan, but the Obi-Wan series.
The Obi-Wan series.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, you're right. Some of the best things we've been given, if not most of the things we've been given that's really good, is because of the foundation that it was built on, which is the prequel era, also known as Anakin Skywalker.
Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. Speaking of all of this that's been built on Anakin, the Bad Batch apparently is going to end with season 3, which is news to me. I had no idea they had plans for only 3 seasons, but this was actually announced a year ago that the 3rd season would be its final season.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is a mistake.
Really?
Yes, you're in a very dangerous time. You have to be very careful story-wise because there is a lot in between. There's a lot bookending. The story of Bad Batch, major story elements. So you do have to be careful. You don't want to run the risk of breaking canon or creating massive plot holes. But I do think they could continue on because how they've told the story so far, except for moments in the first season, they're really just paying attention to very intimate stories.
Yeah. But the overall story is about essentially this family surviving, you know, the war. And when the thing is, when they first mentioned that season 3 was the last one, I kind of understood, especially how season 2 ended. When you have that moment, you know, spoilers, season 2 ends with Echo dying. One of the
Echo.
Key, oh, not Echo, Tech.
Yeah, there we go. I was like, Echo.
Tech ends up dying.
Yeah.
And the way he dies too is like so sad and it's so traumatizing for everybody. Now it's basically now the whole story centers around what do we do with Omega? Because she's caught. She has to apparently now rely on the one quote-unquote brother that left them and with crosshairs. And like that whole story now is about this family surviving.
So, and you don't think they can continue that? That was how we started
after this? No. I don't think I'd be worried that they'd be drawing it out too much. Like,
I don't know, David. Like, I don't disagree. There's always that risk.
Yeah.
Especially because Star Wars, in my opinion, has to move forward. Like every IP that's longer than 25 years, it seems like they're all stuck in the past. None of them can just move forward. And Star Wars has been stuck since 2013, except for the sequels. They're kind of just stuck filling in the crevices and gaps that Lucas
has left
open. And that's all they're doing. And there is a risk there. You can undermine not just canon. You can also undermine thematic intention.
Yes.
If you're not careful. And there are a few projects they've done in the crevices and gaps that has in fact disrupted the thematics that Lucas has set up that governs this specific time period and his world at large. And that's concerning. So yes, on that, looking at it from that point of view, the Bad Batch probably is better off ending sooner than later.
Because that's the thing, like, don't get me wrong. I'm not too afraid of them continuity wise running into problems. Mm-hmm. But what I am here worried about is thematically. If they draw this out a little too long, thematically, then it becomes like a gamble of like, okay, you're starting to undermine what the whole point of this entire era is supposed to be about. We're not in, you know, like the Luke Skywalker era. This is supposed to be the era in between everything where everything is downtrodden.
Right.
The universe is literally led by the Empire at this point. You can't stop that. If you continue on with Bad Batch, you might undermine that thematic element where it's like,
yeah. And you do need to bring some of these characters to an end. So I get the logic behind it. I'm just, as a fan, I'm disappointed that it's ending so soon. But logically, I do get it. I mean, you're dealing with characters that probably shouldn't exist in the world of Star Wars, especially because we learned in A New Hope that the Rebel Alliance is very small. We were introduced to a group of rebels, and over the course of the last 9 years, we keep finding out there's new groups of rebels over here and over there. Same thing with the Jedi. The Jedi were all supposed to be extinct, but suddenly we have Jedi over here and Jedi over there. And I think that is one of the bigger mistakes they've made.
Yes.
Is they keep introducing new Jedi when Jedi were supposed to be extinct. Now, people can say, well, Jedi could survive. It's a big universe. And yes, I've used the same excuse. But Luke and Yoda had a discussion where Yoda says, when I die, the last of the Jedi you will be. Now, that also creates little avenues where you can create excuses and say, well, this person really isn't a Jedi.
Yes.
And you could say that about Ahsoka, who actually walked away from the Jedi Order. But outside of her, you can't really say that about all the other Jedi now who have popped up and who are actually alive. So they do need to be careful. And Bad Batch ending will probably save us from some of those mistakes. But this is the saddest thing about it. So D. Bradley Baker, and I'm sure Thomas will have something to say about this, which is one of the voice actors on Bad Batch and Clone Wars and countless other things, stated that the upcoming third and final season of Disney Plus series will effectively serve as the ending, not just of Bad Batch, but of Star Wars creator George Lucas's legacy. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the last bit of material
that they have.
That they have from Lucas.
Very much.
Why do you have to hurt me? Like, you invite me on here, and you're like, surprise punch to the nads.
Here, Thomas, bend over. We're going to kick you right in the nads for this one.
Bend over for Kathleen Kennedy. She wants to show you something.
She wants to show you something. She wants your tears.
She's
had them for years now.
She has an activist dildo she's going to peg you with. I believe DEI is actually etched on the side of the dildo.
Right. Makes sense.
And she's going to force it up a white man's ass.
Well, yeah, that all checks out.
But that did make me sad hearing that, because that's something that David and I, we've discussed this for so long. What's going to happen when they get to the point where they are out of George Lucas ideas, things that he had passed on to Filoni, ideas that were just kind of floating in the ether.
Yeah.
Script notes, all that stuff. As far as I remember now, based on numerous reports, all of that stuff, scripts, outlines, pitches have all been put in a safe.
Yep. And also
a Bob Iger safe where he just disrespects it.
It's called
every
trash
day
can.
At 3 p.m. He opens up the safe and he laughs at it.
Pisses in it, poops in it, just smears it with his crap. But that's I started thinking about this, Mike. Okay, yes, it is the end of the George Lucas idea. Mm-hmm. Well, that they've been tapping into for the past 10 years, but
let's do a positive spin. Hold on, David. Who is this new David? Because you did this during Ahsoka too. Like, well, let's look at the good side of this.
Let's look at the bright side.
The burning of my family village and the slaughtering of my mother and father were actually for my benefit.
The one thing that we've been saying is they have to start bringing new things to the table. Right,
like color specific motorcycles.
Yes. They bring that,
and bad choreography,
and now, directors who have no experience. I mean, that's all new.
That's all new. And unfortunately,
and bounty hunters who can't catch a little girl.
Now, let's just say maybe the new people they bring in who are competent. Maybe they'll bring in new people who are competent. Mike, let's pray.
We'll see.
Let's pray to the guardians of the wills.
Oh,
that. Maybe someone out there, a filmmaker is going to come out of nowhere and save Star Wars.
You are the last Star Wars fan.
You are the last hope.
Listen, Yoda said it himself. You must unlearn what you have learned.
But that's the positive way I'm trying to think of it now. Because I don't want to actually be sad.
Well, all the writers that are currently writing for Star Wars, they definitely unlearned a lot.
They learned a lot. Nobody on the Titanic wanted to be sad. It didn't stop the ship from sinking.
David is the piano player, though.
Yeah, I'm the violinist. I'm the violinist who's just playing. It's been an honor to serve you. And just go down with the ship.
There is no ship, though. Everything's been scuttled.
I'm still on the ice. I'm still in the water.
Just already underwater at this point.
It's a fucking ghost ship. It doesn't even sink.
Yeah.
No one cares enough to sink the fucking ship.
It just lives in limbo.
She just comes up out of the water every now and again to collect people's souls like Davy Jones.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so I was trying to be positive for the opening, half of the show. It didn't work. But I will say I am looking forward to Bad Batch.
Yeah.
I am a little nervous about us coming to the end of Lucas's ideas. Now, you could also argue that they've ignored Lucas's ideas anyways. They've only used the stuff they wanted to and then haphazardly adapted it.
I would legitimately argue that they have been at the end of his ideas since they bought the property. Because nothing that they've done has either A, been what he gave them or in the same spirit.
Well, you got to remember,
Ahsoka might be called Ahsoka Tano, but what I saw in that show was not a sequel to Rebels.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't a sequel to Rebels. And also the thing was, we know for a fact that Kathleen Kennedy and, you know, the higher ups in Star Wars have been given ideas by Lucas and have actually turned them down.
So are we really at this point losing anything?
As far as Filoni goes, yes, because Filoni has respected that. That's why he did that seventh season of Clone Wars, which was...
That might be the one good thing.
And then Bad Batch is also George Lucas. Clone Wars, oh, I already said that. So, I mean, some of the best things we've been given...
have been tied to the prequels.
Yeah, and Lucas. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Now, moving into this new era of Star Wars, because we're done with what I guess you can say phase one,
the Enlightenment era.
The Enlightenment era.
As we move into the Dark Ages.
Just the other month, I believe just this past month, January, it was announced that there is going to be another Star Wars movie. So in 2019, Disney had mentioned that if The Mandalorian was successful, a feature film spinoff would be considered. Well, in January 2024, it was announced that series creator Jon Favreau would write and direct a film based on the series, and it is separate from Filoni's upcoming film, and this movie is going to be titled The Mandalorian and Grogu. Filming was expected to begin later in 2024, as the first Star Wars film to enter production since The Rise of Skywalker. In February 2024, Disney CEO Bob Iger announced that the film is aiming for a 2026 release, and no other specifics were given at the time. So that's pretty much all we know. But I feel that with this particular movie, a lot of us can formulate or speculate how the movie will end up being shaped. We know what Jon Favreau is capable of.
Yes.
We know the work he's done on the Mandalorian Disney Plus series. I don't think there's a mystery there. But it can go one of two ways. Will this be Jon Favreau writing, I should say, will this be Iron Man Jon Favreau?
There you go.
Or will this be Mandalorian season three, Favreau?
Yeah.
That's the question. Now, I am not as nervous as I might have been immediately after Mandalorian season three, only because Favreau's skill set is predominantly the feature film. He is not good at TV. Disney Plus Mandalorian has proven that. It's just not that great.
Yeah.
It's mediocre. It's not horrible. It's mediocre. It fluctuates between a C plus and a C minus, but his movie work fluctuates, I'd say, from a B minus to an A.
An A.
Iron Man is an A plus. Iron Man 2 is a B plus. Iron Man 3 is probably like an A minus, B plus, mm-hmm. depending on your specific styles. So we know he can make good movies. Swingers, one of the first movies he wrote, is an A plus film. Zathura is a great kids film. He knows how to make movies.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely nervous about this. I'm just nervous with how simple and ineffective the movie will be, because it's coming at the tail end of Mandalorian season three,
which was universally hated.
It was not good. But I'm kind of like in the boat with you, where it's kind of like, throughout the entire time, me and you have covered Mandalorian, we basically said, Jon Favreau, we've loved Jon Favreau as the filmmaker, but we have all seen that his weakness is he can't write TV if his life depended
on it. And he's also not a super great writer.
He's not a good showrunner.
I would even say, even as a film writer, he's okay. He is capable, but he's a better director.
Yeah, and that's where I basically am with you, is like, we know Favreau's pedigree in film is above average. So if he's given a chance to do a Star Wars movie, If they say, if now, if they say, oh, this is going to be broken up into multiple parts, then I'll be really worried.
I don't think they will do that.
Well, here's the question really, though, guys. Will it actually happen? Because legitimately, how many projects have been announced?
That's the
right when an earnings call is about to happen. So to drum up that excitement, to then go completely ignored, The Way of the Dodo, or straight out canceled. Rian Johnson's trilogy, Taika Waititi's trilogy.
Oh, that's still happening.
Dave and the Benioff Game of Thrones fuck up trilogy. Kevin Feige's film died in November. The Rogue Squadron with Patty Jenkins, is she even still making movies?
No.
Nope.
The Rangers of the New Republic with after Gina Carano, that's dead too.
That's dead too.
Maybe The Acolyte. Maybe. Do you have the J.D. Dillard had a film that he's announced he's no longer working on. Sean Levy was talked about doing a film. There's a lot that they have thrown out there and not dick has happened
there are
since 2019.
There are four films that are official. That is The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Yeah.
For now.
The untitled Rey standalone movie.
Movies. We're talking about movies, right?
Yes. Okay. The untitled Dave Filoni film, which I still believe is going to be a Disney Plus film. I do not think that's going to be a theatrical release. Unless you guys have heard otherwise. No. Just knowing what it's about.
Disney release.
The fact that he is going to, he's tasked to bring closure to the Mandalorian and Ahsoka Disney Plus era. That's the pitch for the movie. It's supposed to bring together all of those shows.
Well, yeah. And here's
you can't
question,
really though. Make a movie for the mainstream that is geared around closing out stories multiple that shows. Were started multiple in multiple shows.
What else tried that? The Marvels. How did that work
and,
out?
And Doctor Strange.
WandaVision you had to see for Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
The Marvels you needed to see, what? Ms. Marvel, WandaVision, and possibly Secret Invasion.
Yep.
For all... And seven people went to the theater to see that movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's not... What I don't get about that is not a setup for success. And I don't understand how veteran producers, whether it's Kathleen Kennedy or anybody behind the wheel, is sitting here looking at this ramshackle Parkinson's drawn sketch of an idea of a schedule and saying, yep, signed, sealed, and delivered. And that, like, I am the cynic of this group. I understand that. That's why I'm rarely on the show. But it's like I you can only cry wolf so many times before I'm just not gonna come out anymore and help you.
I think your argument is valid for the Rey movie, for the Dave Filoni movie, and the James Mangold film. Those are the other three that have been official.
Was it Dawn of something?
The Mandalorian and Grogu film has a set fan base, as well as it could rely on the Star Wars fan base at large. And it's Jon Favreau's name. He's the most experienced director outside of Mangold. In fact, he's probably more experienced than James Mangold at this point. I think there's more going for that movie.
Yeah.
The other three, though,
it has more momentum or inertia.
Yes.
But the other three just.
But going back to what Thomas said, Thomas, you said that you felt like they were essentially making this. They announced these movies because of
an earnings call.
Yeah. Earnings call. But there's another more cynical way to even look at this, believe it or not, because this movie was not. There was rumors that this would happen. But with Filoni's announcement that he would be making a Mandalorian and Ahsoka film, people had assumed that would be it. But after the backlash of the Rey film, because of the director that's attached to helm this film, it seems like the announcement of the Mandalorian and Grogu
is a quick patch job.
Was simply a way to fix things.
Oh yeah, it's a PR
it was a PR move,
and that's why I'm just like depressed about it, because you're not creating things that you want to create that have merit that should fit in the legacy of Star Wars. You're using announcements as a PR duct tape.
Yes,
and that's just. Fuck you.
Like, I agree. And also, The Mandalorian has been PR duct tape since its conception. Years. That's what it was when the first season. It was like, oh, you guys don't like anything we're doing. Okay, let's just do Mandalorian. If they would have made this movie after season one, let's say the first season was simply an event series, I think this movie would have been huge.
Yeah.
But because
they chose to do it
now. After the first season, the second season of Mandalorian also didn't connect with mainstream audiences. It wasn't maligned.
Yeah.
But it also didn't.
It's not the same.
It did not generate the excitement that the first season did. The mainstream excitement that you had around season one is what you need for a successful franchise.
Yes.
That died out after the first season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Third season, it was even far less excitement. In fact, were people, hardcore Mandalorian fans, who were also shitting on that third season because it was an incoherent, indecisive mess.
Well, he's not even the main character.
It even wasn't mediocre.
No, it was bad. It was bad.
This is David saying
that. Yeah, it wasn't bad. So
this is me saying that.
Let's move to the next bit of Star Wars news when it comes to movies. Let's get into this a bit deeper. We've hinted at it. We've alluded to it. But let's talk about the big cancer that is killing all of us right now. The Hollywood Reporter reported that after a 2-week writer's room in July, which included some people, I won't get into their names, but also people. Included possibly Dave Filoni, Damon Lindelof and Justin Britt Gibson were co-writing a Star Wars film with Ms. Marvel director Charmaine Obaid Chinoy attached as director. I don't want to call her a Miss Marvel director because that was a TV series and she directed two episodes. That was it. So this film is announced as being a standalone film that has to do with the expansion of Daisy Ridley's character, Rey Skywalker.
No, get it right. Say it. Rey Palpatine.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes.
Rey Palpatine. I will not call her a Skywalker.
Rey Palpatine.
There we go.
However, in March 2023, it was reported that Lindelof and Britt Gibson had left the project in mid-February.
Shock.
Of course. And then they brought on Steve Knight, who's a very good writer.
Yes.
And already, he was on board before Chinoy, the director. And of course, there are already creative differences and a rumor that he threatened to walk off the project because of massive creative differences between him and the director.
Yes.
Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what this problem could possibly
be. Smoke, there's fire. And these are just ashes at this point.
Who is Charmaine Obaid Chinoy, the director of the next Star Wars film? And just to give people some context here. Unlike previous Star Wars directors, Rian Johnson, J.J. Abrams, and George Lucas, of course, Charmaine Obaid Chinoy is best known for her history as a documentarian and journalist. Her film history is largely one that is centered on activism in her native Pakistan, and although she has recent experience with larger franchises, her introduction to the Star Wars universe as a film director reflects a fairly large transition from her career-wise, one that is sure to bring a unique perspective, according to this article, Screen Rant, to the upcoming New Jedi Order movie. Despite that, Obaid Chinoy has indicated that one driving force behind her work is an interest in heroes, and Star Wars is certainly a galaxy with many
heroes.
This background could be an exciting one for the franchise, which has already adjusted its approaches in recent years, as seen with Star Wars' expansion into transmedia. Chinoy's specific interest in heroes may even further bring to light the truth. Heroism, especially in Star Wars, can come from many places. Now, the backlash behind this director being hired has nothing to do with her being a woman. I don't think anybody would care about that. It has to do with the fact that once her name was let out into the ether as the next director of Star Wars fans and others started to research who this person was because nobody was familiar with her work. And the first thing they found was that she, in 2015, during a conference pertaining, I believe, to her documentary,
Documentary.
Jesus Christ. Thank you, Thomas. Documentary. Oh my God.
Documentary.
Documentary.
You see what happens when he actually has to deal with Star Wars? It fries his brain.
No, I'm just getting words mixed up because of their choice vocabulary with documentarian, which I've never liked that name.
Documentarian? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So documentary. She said, I enjoy making men uncomfortable. And because that video was clipped and sent out onto the interwebs, it went viral. And immediately people started to panic.
Yeah.
Her comments, which, you know what? Let me just bring it up so we could hear it from her own mouth. Nope, that's not it. That's her other asinine thing she said.
I was like, which one?
Where are you?
Trying to permeate that patriarchy, that power structure.
I like to make men uncomfortable. I enjoy making men uncomfortable. It is important to be able to look into the eyes of a man and say, I am here, and recognize that. And recognize that I am working to bring something that makes you uncomfortable, and it should make you uncomfortable, because you need to change your attitude.
Okay, so... Okay. Are her comments annoying? Yes, but she's talking... First off... I don't disagree with her artist perspective on making people uncomfortable. I think that's an important part of making art. You're supposed to particular forms of art. Star Wars isn't room for that in Star Wars. You don't need to make people uncomfortable in Star Wars. The whole point of an IP like that is that you want to bring in the most people as possible so you can have a box office hit, right? You can make money for the studio. The movie has to make money. Otherwise, there will be no more. That's just the nature of the business. You have to try to make formula films. Formula films typically adhere to the mass ideology of people so they can enjoy what they're watching and they want to go to it. Mm-hmm. So her comment about making men uncomfortable, I get it, especially when you understand the context of that specific discussion she's having. She actually makes documentaries about honor killings.
Yeah.
And acid being thrown in women's faces. So if she's talking about making those types of men uncomfortable.
Allegedly, I can't confirm this myself, which is why I say allegedly, but mm-hmm. allegedly it is. She's referring to the honor killing documentary.
Yeah.
And challenging the men of the Pakistani culture to look differently at how they carry themselves and what they believe in and what they do. So the context is important on that.
Correct.
We don't want to unfairly attribute that to like after Star Wars interview.
But that kind of leads into the question I was going to ask you, Thomas. Mm-hmm. Is like, now I'm the only reason why I am disappointed in this choice of director isn't about her political beliefs. It's not about even about that statement, because just like what you alluded to, Mike, I understand what she's saying. She's talking as an artist. That's what art's supposed to do. You're supposed to make your audience feel something or react to your art. Okay. But just like what you mentioned earlier, the problem that I've always had with Star Wars, you know, whether it's Kathleen Kennedy, it probably is. Their choice of filmmakers. Mm-hmm. For some strange reason, none of the filmmakers they chose understand that core concept, that they're here not to make a artistic piece. They're here to make a big budget blockbuster.
And they're also, Star Wars isn't here to be their mouthpiece for their own personal ideology and their problems that they want to air out to the whole world.
And when I look at her, filmography, I'm like, I see she has some directorial.
Here, David, this will voice what you're trying to say. Here we go.
I think at the heart of everything, I am a storyteller and an activist. And my body of work over the last 20 years has been guided by my activism. And every single piece of work that I've ever created has a piece of activism in it. It could be very overt or it could be covert, but it is there. And I think that as a storyteller, I'm not sure if all of you know this, but I'm not a trained filmmaker. So I never went to film school. I went to Smith College and did my undergraduate and studied economics and political science like a good Pakistani girl. and then I did my graduate studies, but also in international politics. And so,
but that's what I mean is mm-hmm. like, if you want a good Star Wars film, you must get the personnel that will give you a good Star Wars film. I don't need an activist.
Hasn't this been the problem, David? This has been the problem since day one. Do you remember, Dave, Gareth Edwards for Rogue One wasn't the greatest pick. In fact, he was such a poor pick because he had no experience. Yes, Godzilla, but Godzilla is
but he was just totally different to the scene. That was
he was brand new. Brand new. Godzilla was his first and only major film he made, and he steps on the set for Star Wars and it falls apart.
Yes.
So much so that they had to hire new people. In fact, the person who really made the movie is the gentleman that's now running Andor. He's the one who put together that movie, the finished product, and did massive reshoots. They made a bad choice with Chris Miller and Phil Lord for Solo, who thought they were making a comedy film.
Yes.
They were fired after 90% of the movie was shot.
Yeah.
They bring on Ron Howard, which I thought was a decent choice, but the damage was already done. They bring J.J. Abrams on, which I thought was a decent choice for the initial Force Awakens. Then you bring on Rian Johnson, who only really did small
indie films.
He did indie films and then did a few small non-indie, I guess you can call it small studio pictures.
Yeah.
But they were nothing like The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
They continually pick the wrong people.
I don't understand why.
Because Kathleen Kennedy, we could just be simple about this and say Kathleen Kennedy just doesn't have a clue
or as to what she's doing.
She doesn't know what she's looking for because, like, remember the one joke that me and you were talking about, Mike, was like, she was awestruck because Gareth Edwards decided to use a camera on his shoulder. And I'm like going, this is the person that's picking our personnel.
What?
Yeah, well, because it is so innovative that he would take the camera and put it on his shoulder and use that to shoot.
Wait a minute.
This is the same person that's picking our personnel. And it's like, it has nothing to do with her, with the current director's political beliefs. My issue is the fact that she is not experienced, nor does she have the acumen to actually do this film.
Now, people keep trying to figure out why they made this decision, because regardless of the reasons behind the backlash, mm-hmm. misogyny, sexism, racism,
okay.
Misguided individuals who don't know the full context, there is a backlash, period.
Yeah.
And they should have known that there would be a backlash, because when you hire someone, just like you do when you hire directors now and you go through 25 years of Twitter tweets to make sure that this person fits your little box of yeses, you should do the same thing with a woman like this. You should know that Star Wars fans are going to Google the name, and it may not be fair. But it's the reality of the world we live in, and the fact that the Star Wars fans are burnt out. They're going to be ready for anything. And the fact that you announce a Rey movie, which is already a little divisive.
Yes.
Then you attach a director. Forget her politics for a second. Like you said, David.
Yeah.
She has zero experience, and you're handing her a multi-billion-dollar franchise.
She's not trained in filmmaking either, you don't necessarily need to be to make something quality. But
yes,
between the not trained, no major studio budget picture experience, not a Star Wars fan, I can guarantee you she's not a Star Wars fan. Not really. Everyone will say they are when a PR camera is on them, but like, come on. But that's right. Like, imagine if your doctor is like, I've never done this before. I have kind of guessed. I've deboned
exactly
a fish.
What I was thinking.
So let's prep you for spinal surgery.
The answers are very simple. They're right in front of our face. People keep asking, why are they doing this? Why do they hire Chinoy? Obey Chinoy. And it's simply ideology. They're waging, Disney is waging an ideology war. So we can try to ignore politics
but
when we're really looking for answers and seeking answers as to why these things are happening, it is political. It is absolutely political. The reason why Kathleen Kennedy is hiring this person and bringing her on is simply because of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those are the reasons why you hire someone with no experience. We used to be a meritocracy where you were put in positions of power, authority, decision-making based on your merits, based on your skills. But because we have noticed injustices in our country, we're now trying to remedy that by forcing people who don't have the skills into positions.
Yes.
And that's just not how you do it. I'm not against inclusion. I'm not against equality or, of course, diversity. But there's ways to do it. If you want to bring in a new batch, a new breed, a new blood of filmmaker that fits your DEI wantings, then bring them in as apprentices.
Yeah.
Have them work side by side the people who have the skills.
Get the experience, get the skill set.
Have them get the experience and skill set so that you could actually safely put these people in positions of creative power and they can make movies properly.
And make sure that they have the proper experience, because everyone's probably going to point out and say, well, she does have directorial experience. I'm going, yes,
that's,
but if you look at her filmography,
is incredibly different.
A documentary is completely different. Marvel's, she only did 2 episodes. And that's not even a full length feature.
Here's the thing. Like I'm probably will get crap for this too, but like a documentary, you are an observer as the director. You're putting together a story kind of with your editor, but in truth, you are just capturing real experiences and real interviews and real things that happen. Narrative film, storytelling in that respect, where you have to actually deal with actors and blocking and choreography and where's the music going to go and how is this going to come together as a greater piece, is entirely different. You can go out with zero experience and be a documentary filmmaker because you are just truly an observer of what's happening. But it's a lot of skill sets to do something created.
Let me add to that, Thomas, because this is going to piss people off.
It's going to piss people
because
off.
Because I said this in film school too. Typically, when I went to film school, the people that moved into the documentary track had no skills.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be fucking blunt about it.
Because
am I right, David? Do you remember the people that wanted to do documentaries?
Yeah.
They had zero creativity.
You don't have to write. You don't have to direct people. You don't have to choreograph or be cinematography skilled in any sense, because you can have shaky cam or cell phone footage because it's an undercover, you know, capturing of some event that's being secretive and shit like that. Like, there are no guidelines or rules to making a documentary other than the truth. And even that, if you took moral and ethics in film like I did, is questionable because everything is told from a perspective.
It's bizarre that Disney's doing this, because think of other industries. You're not going to hire, if you're a publishing company, you're not going to look at Joe Schmo down the street and say, hey, we want to hire you. Here's a $2 million advance. We would like you to write a manuscript for a new sci-fi series. That doesn't happen. Record labels don't go up to some regular dude. Let's say me, who I don't play an instrument. Like, we want to sign you and we want you to be the lead singer and lead guitarist in this new band. I have zero experience. It's okay. That's what they're doing.
Used to be that your parents, the guilt trip that your parents would give you is no one's just going to come around and give you a sack full of money to do whatever you want. Disney's doing that. That's the business model.
And like, if the original, because remember, Mike, a long time ago, we were talking about how me and you were excited originally because like Lucasfilm was saying, we want to bring in new blood. We want to bring in hot directors from today. All right, if you're going to do that, how about, okay, here's an example for today. Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest. Bring in a director like that. He's new, number one, and he has the pedigree. He has that acumen that basically says, I can direct a feature film.
Dude, Sofia Coppola, Catherine Bigelow. I mean, there are so many. Yeah. Sofia Coppola would be a perfect pick. Yes, she's only handled smaller films, but she's handled about 15 of them, and she's the daughter of one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. So she grew up in the industry. She understands movies. from beginning to end, she gets the business and she gets what movies are supposed to be.
You want to get good directors that let's say
there's
Kathleen
plenty
Kennedy,
of women directors out there that are, that know what the fuck they're doing.
Let's say Kathleen Kennedy wants to get a director that has the same quote unquote political agenda and has done a film that basically probably would fit her political ideals. Yorgos Lanthimos from Poor Things. Poor Things is okay, fine. You want to do that type of storytelling? Okay, go get that guy. He's brand new.
He's not militant enough.
And that's the problem.
That's what Kathleen Kennedy's looking for. She's looking for someone who speaks like Charmaine Obey Chinoy. But she wants someone to be a mouthpiece for her because she's angry.
There you go. She wants a yes man.
I used to not feel this way about Kathleen Kennedy, but where there's smoke, there's fire. She hates George Lucas. It's obvious she hates Star Wars. It's obvious that she
hates Indy.
That she doesn't even like movies. Like, it doesn't even seem like she's, if I didn't know better, I wouldn't even think she's been in the movie business for the past 40 years.
Yeah. That's what I just don't understand. Like, how much vitriolic hate can you have for something for everyone in the industry to say you are making the wrong decision for straight up 10 years now, and all you do is double or nothing, double or nothing, double or nothing.
The thing is that when you're in the midst of a culture war, there are sides. And these sides, just like with any war, do you just lay down your guns and give up? No, you continue to fight. And we are in a culture war. And Kathleen Kennedy is using her IPs as the weapon to wage this culture war.
There is
no other explanation. Yeah. I used to run from this explanation. If you remember, I defended Kathleen Kennedy. But at this point, it is fucking obvious.
When South Park makes fun of you for it.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah. It's what's happening. And just to be a little more doom and gloom about it, activists have infiltrated all levels. That's been their agenda. How do you conquer? You infiltrate.
One step at a time.
And that's what they've done. These activists have infiltrated the investor groups. People wonder, well, Disney's got to make changes now because they lost majorly last year. In 2023, they had four consecutive bombs. That's the first in Disney history. But when you have activists in that boardroom who don't care about profit, there will be no changes.
Well, and it's also, it's a war of attrition. It's no amount of ground given in an ideological war like this will ever be enough. And it's not about necessarily even big wins. When they finally get some pushback, as we are seeing with the Variety article that called out that Disney and Marvel is on fire and the South Park episode, you know, they may push back, but it's about these incremental gains over time.
Yes.
Win a little bit here, win a little bit there, because like the tide itself, it will never stop.
And unfortunately, that's how I feel like, me and you have always championed the fact that, well, Dave Filoni is the last bastion of hope.
Or has he been assimilated?
The problem is there's someone bigger than him in that pond.
There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish. And that bigger fish is Kathleen. Kathleen, probably that is probably the only reason why Filoni is still around, is because if shit goes sideways, all Kathleen has to do is not blame him, but see if he can save the day just to give that, just like what you said, Thomas, that incremental, you know, good vibe, one to make everyone happy.
Just inch by inch.
Well, that takes us to our last topic here, Dave. Dave Filoni has officially, as of November 21st, been officially announced.
Oh, wow.
Died. He died from a broken heart, like the fucking rest of us.
I was going to say.
He has been named Chief Creative Officer at Lucasfilm, and he will be planning the future of Star Wars films and shows. So that is something that we could look forward to. However, David, is this position simply...
A title
to serve as a buffer between the fans and the obvious dislike and hate they have for Kathleen Kennedy?
That's the thing.
Is it that, or is it her not wanting to face the brunt of all these attacks and now wishes to put everything on Filoni's shoulders, even though she's still in charge, And she can now point to him and say, well, it's his fault, not
exactly.
Me.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I am viewing it, that it seems simply a position made up so that the blame could be put on him.
It's both. I think it's both a scapegoat position so the blame can fall on him and take some heat off of her. And I think as long as she's controlling Lucasfilm,
yeah,
he and any title are, you know, facades. They are in name only. I mean, I work at a corporation and I know that the people who are titled certain things are absolutely the puppets of other people. Yeah,
he's not going to have complete creative control. I guarantee you he's going to have to run everything through her. Yep. She's going to veto stuff. It's just the same thing with James Gunn talking about him having complete power over DC. I'm like, yeah, until you don't.
Yeah, until you piss off someone at Warner Brothers.
They may say you have complete power, but at any moment DC can say, all right, well, you're not doing exactly what we want, so we're going to interfere here.
Isn't that the entire history of DC's leadership so far?
Yeah. And Kathleen Kennedy will probably do the same thing.
The thing I wanted to bring up to you about this, because this was actually a article I read actually today about it. And people were like speculating, well, it's great that Filoni gets this bump and, you know, hey, he's going to have hopefully more creative say in what's going to happen. How much is this of Kathleen Kennedy making sure? Yeah. Just like what you said, Thomas, she has her scapegoat in play, because now, this is something that I didn't think about, because I'm not sure. I wanted clarification from you, Mike. Iger's role in all of this.
He's the CEO of Disney.
Does he have any say in Lucasfilm?
When you're a CEO, yes.
He should.
Yeah, he absolutely does have a say. If Kathleen Kennedy isn't delivering.
Exactly.
You know, and that's why he would fire her.
And everyone knows Iger's quick on that trigger. He doesn't care
not
if
this
he.
Quick, apparently.
Well, the sad thing is, though, maybe this isn't a sad thing, but it is when trying to prove our point here. I mean, Disney hasn't lost money on Star Wars.
No, it hasn't.
But
it hasn't gained.
That's the truth of it. It has gained, but what happens when you continue to put out subpar work that people don't like, eventually the money will run.
It will.
Out.
Yeah.
But as it is now, when you look at the Star Wars films, they made all their money back. Their investment that they had spent $4 billion to buy Star Wars from Lucas, they made it before the release of Force Awakens. They made it back sheerly on merchandising and marketing prior to the film. So the first movie alone got them out of the red. And since then, every movie has done pretty well, except for the obvious bombs. But when you put them all in one basket, the successful films more than makes up for the poor performing films. I feel like the deciding factor for Kathleen Kennedy's future is going to be these next couple movies. If these movies come out, she will be fired if they bomb.
That's what I was like saying. That's why she put Filoni in the position she's in.
That's my point.
Well,
yep, that's
Kevin
what I was getting
Feige
to.
Did that with... what's her name? The director of visual effects, essentially. A lot of people feel like that was a scapegoat move. Not that she didn't have, you know, blood on her hands. I mean, look at She-Hulk. Jesus fucking Christ. But the people at the top are going to find a fall person in so that they take the guillotine to the neck, not them. But I mean, the sad fact is, though, like, you're not wrong about making this money back, but looking at the Skywalker sequel trilogy, right? Force Awakens worldwide box office gross $2 billion. I'm rounding. Last Jedi 1.3, and then Rise of Skywalker 1.07. The sad fact is those are abysmal numbers for what should have been Star Wars.
Should have been, yeah.
Like, and they went down every release.
And that's how it's going to continue.
It's going to continue
with every Star Wars film.
And as these budgets balloon, you know, the budget of Force Awakens, $447 million, insane. Last Jedi, $300 million. Rise of Skywalker, $416 million, probably 80% of which was reshoots. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to make almost $1 billion, if not, if your budget's cresting $300 million to be profitable after distribution deals and cost. So if you're not pulling that, with Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck did you do?
There's another angle to look at this as well, to look at this entire scenario. Star Wars, people would argue that this was also the case with George Lucas, but I would disagree. One of the things that's keeping Star Wars alive is that it's essentially a toy company.
It had been.
Now, sales are down, so things are going to run dry. But the reason why they can keep boasting and pounding the chest since 2013 is because they've made so much money. Because you can look at Star Wars as no longer just simply a movie brand. It's a TV brand. It's a clothing brand. It's an entertainment brand because of the theme park they built.
Yeah.
So the Star Wars as a whole is profitable as of now. But they need movies and successful movies and yes. successful shows to keep the pond filled. Just like I say about Star Trek, you need to generate those movies because that's what brings in the mainstream.
Yeah.
It creates the mainstream excitement, introduces new people to your franchise, and mm-hmm. eventually the money will run out. And according to the last report, the toy sales are down.
Oh, yeah.
First time ever.
You don't think that Rose Tico toy is selling?
Oh, I bought one. Just a shit on it. That's not true. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Thomas and David. We're done.
Thank you. May the force be with us.
Oh, yes.